From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Sunnyvale, California.
Oakland, California.
Oakland, California.
North Oakland.
North Oakland.
North Berkeley.
South Berkeley.
Adams Point.
Yosemite.
Coming up, we'll take a ride on a bus that's used for more than transportation.
You know, if you have to ride this bus, you know, you've got to be prepared to, you know, defend what you've got. And just really, you know, sleep with the one eye open.
Then we'll talk with Bevan Dufty about what San Francisco is doing to find housing for the homeless.
Ultimately, it costs about $18,000 a year to mitigate the effects of someone living on the street. And so I just think that more and more people want to see people housed.
And a new program is rolling out to bring showers to those without access.
You just got to get in and get out. No singing.
Stay with us. That's all coming up on Cross Currents. Santa Clara County has the fifth biggest homeless population in the United States. Officials estimate that means about 18,000 people are homeless over the course of a year.
Now, the city of San Jose is trying to address the problem. Tonight, they voted unanimously to approve a pilot program, which would help the homeless find temporary shelter in hotels and motels.
That plan is moving forward, but it would only house 60 people. This is just the latest idea to house the county's homeless, because there just isn't enough shelter space for everyone. So for years, the homeless in the area have turned to alternatives to find a place to stay, like encampments in the county's network of creeks, or spending the night on Hotel 22. That's the nickname for Line 22, the county's only overnight bus service. For over a decade, people have been using Line 22 at night for shelter. The Valley Transportation Authority knows that people use the bus this way. It's been going on for over a decade. Brandy Childress is spokesperson for the VTA.
They are like any fair-paying customer. We can't discriminate on who and why they're riding. So the customers, you know, whether they have a home or not, they're riding and they're following the rules. And as long as they're doing that, we have no reason for them to be, you know, denied the services.
KALW's Isabel Angel took a ride on the 22 to meet some of the people who call it home.
I've heard there's a nickname for the bus. Do you know what it is?
Yeah, there's the Motel 22 or Hotel 22. That's the big one I've heard. I call it home.
That's Michael Garber. I'm riding the 22 bus with him and his wife.
My name is Elizabeth Garber. I've been homeless for about 8 months so far, riding the bus 22 as many times at night as we have money for.
Right now, we're on the bus somewhere between East San Jose and Palo Alto. It's 2:30 a.m. and it's raining. Some people are covered in blankets, settled way down in their seats. Others are surrounded by bags. During the day, this is a regular city bus, but at night, it makes an unofficial transformation from bus 22 to hotel 22. Dozens of people like the Garbers pay the $2 fare and use this bus as a shelter for the length of its route, a two-hour ride. So that means once every 2 hours, everybody has to get off and stand out in the cold to wait for the next bus. Back aboard, I meet Jose Diaz. He's spending tonight on Hotel 22.
I'm a homeless guy, and this is Elizabeth.
Elizabeth from Campbell.
We just met. I guess we're going to hang out. She says she's hanging out with me. I don't know why, but she doesn't even know me.
Diaz has been homeless for 14 years. He usually sleeps outside. The reason he's on the bus tonight?
To get out of the rain.
And nowhere else to go.
Up ahead, we come to a stop.
We can get up and go to Denny's. I got a little bit of money. We'll get some coffee. There's Denny's right there. Hey, pull the thing. We're getting out.
Denny's. Want
to go get some coffee?
Yeah, let's get some coffee.
Staying on the Hotel 22 means it's the middle of the night. The lights are on. You're surrounded by 30 or so people you hardly know, and it's loud. There's a chatter rising above the sounds of the bus, mostly from people heading home after a night out. There's also a drunk man talking loudly to whoever will listen, and a woman sharing her history of drug abuse with her seatmate. Not your typical bedroom.
And, you know, like, your stuff's not secure, you're not secure. It's just, I think the greatest hardship of it all is just the constant, almost paranoid sense of vigilance you have to maintain. You know, if you have to ride this bus, you know, you've got to be prepared to, you know, defend what you've got and just really, you know, sleep with one eye open.
Garber says he only sleeps about 3 hours a night, and that takes a toll.
Oh, yeah, I've missed interviews because I fall asleep on the bus in the morning and miss my stop. I wake up, I've missed court dates. And so, yeah, I don't know how many opportunities I've lost because of it, you know.
Garber had a job working for Walmart, but they didn't keep him on. He and his wife, Elizabeth, used to live with her mother, but they couldn't contribute enough rent after he lost his job.
We ended up on the street, and we've been doing that ever since.
They've tried to sign up for affordable housing, but nothing has panned out. That's because Santa Clara County has a 3% vacancy rate, the lowest in the country. That means finding housing is competitive for everyone. Landlords are much more likely to go for someone with a stable job history over a person coming off the streets or a bus. We're getting close to the last stop. I head to the front to talk to the driver. I ask her what she thinks of driving people who have nowhere else to go.
You know, everybody who gets on, they're getting on for a reason. Either they're going to sleep from, you know, end to end, or they're going home, or they're going to work, or it doesn't bother me. I just, you know, do my job.
So are we coming up to the end right now?
Yes. And then
we pull into the Palo Alto Transit Center, the end of the line. It's about 3:30 in the morning. A guard steps on.
Last stop, please, board the bus.
Walk off.
Everybody files off, some more willingly than others. Then they cross to the other side of the terminal and wait for the next bus. It's raining tonight, but summer's coming, and many of the people I talked to said they'll start sleeping outside instead of on the bus. Next winter, though, one of the county's biggest homeless shelters is set to close. That could mean even more people spending the night on Hotel 22. In Palo Alto, I'm Isabel Angel for Cross Currents.
And thanks to KALW's Angela Johnston, who helped produce that report. You can find more local stories at KALW.org. Just click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan, and Isabel Angel, our reporter from that story, joins me now in studio. So, Isabel, your story centered on people who are currently using Line 22 as a makeshift shelter. But I understand that in the process of reporting that story, you spent a night on the bus yourself. You met somebody who managed to move on from Hotel 22, an actual success story.
Yeah, I actually found her through Yelp. So I searched the site for any reviews of Line 22, and I found a bunch, so mostly from just regular riders like this person, Patricia V, who wrote, "The bus is always on time, give or take a few minutes either way. Love those fast, aggressive male drivers. And bus drivers, please lower the bus so I can get my bike on the rack easier." But one really caught my eye, and that was from Helen Garcia. And she wrote, "If you're traveling on Line 22 at night, the homeless look for shelter, and this is the only way they can sleep comfortably. Some drivers are nice enough to put the heater on, but some are rude and put the AC on late at night on cold nights so they will be cold. I was homeless once, and this was my only way to sleep at night. I found this to be the safest way to survive on the coldest of nights."
Wow, that's really moving.
Yeah, and so I just kind of on a whim sent her an email and told her about the story I was working on, and we met up at a coffee shop in San Jose by her apartment, and she told me that back in 2006 she was homeless, and she usually had a job, but her husband at the time had a temper, and that kept them out of a stable living situation.
My ex-husband never worked one job, so I kind of felt like I was, you know, being used the entire time. Not only used, being abused, being, you know, physically raped, mentally, emotionally, everything was just at its worst.
Garcia says she grew up in a middle-class family and had to quickly adapt to being homeless, and she said that one of the hardest things was learning how to sleep on the bus.
One way that I had learned how to do this was taking my backpack and putting it to the front of myself and holding on to it like I was hugging a pillow and then sleeping that way next to the window. You know, it'd be cold, yes, on the left side, but then you'd still be warm with the person next to you.
That's Helen Garcia, a former resident of what's called Hotel 22, which is an all-night bus line in Santa Clara County that people have been using as a makeshift shelter for years. So how did Helen Garcia eventually move on from the bus, Isabel?
Well, back in 2006, the Section 8 housing list opened up and she got her name on it. She told me she was number 24,000 on the waiting list, but in 2009, they gave her a call and let her know that she qualified for a voucher. And she's been in that same apartment in downtown San Jose ever since. She divorced that husband, and now she has a baby daughter with her new boyfriend, and the family is looking for a two-bedroom.
And you rode the bus for a night with people who aren't as lucky as Helen Garcia. Section 8 is, again, closed. Is there anything else you can share from that ride?
Yeah, I was really struck by the diversity on the bus. So, you know, looking around, it was people who'd been on the streets for a long time, the newly homeless, and anywhere in between. I talked to people who were wearing garbage bags, people who were wearing North Face jackets. And personally, one couple has really stayed with me. They were young, and they just looked so normal, but they were homeless. The young man had a job, and so he didn't want to be recorded for fear of being recognized. He was just so embarrassed about spending the night on the bus. And the young woman, she had been in foster care or homeless most of her life, and she was complaining that her stomach hurt. And she explained that when you're homeless, you have to eat fast food. You don't have any other options. It was just little things like that, you know. Not only do you not have a bedroom, you're sleeping on a bus, you can't even make your own food.
That's Isabel Angel. She's a reporter for KALW. Thanks, Isabel.
Thanks, Holly.
And if you or someone you know has used the 22 bus to help them out when they were without a place to live, you can give us a call at 415-264-7106 to share that story. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. On any given night in the U.S., there are more than 600,000 people who are homeless. In San Francisco, the government estimates there are about 6,400 people living on the street or in shelters. The numbers have increased only slightly over the past few years, but with the current lack of housing in the city, many are wondering if the problem's going to get worse. I sat down with Bevan Dufty from the mayor's office. Dufty is the director of the Housing Opportunity Partnerships and Engagement, or HOPE. I asked him what San Francisco has been doing for the homeless population.
Over the past 2 years, we've added $1 million each year to improve our shelters, to provide more resources for staff and case managers, deeper cleanings, other things that will make that experience better. And yes, there are many people that for reasons, and some of them good reasons, have chosen not to stay in shelters. We have 1,145 shelter beds in San Francisco, and they are consistently running at 96% to 98% full. 10 years ago, when Mayor Newsom and Angela Alioto led the 10-year plan to end chronic homelessness, we had 1,900 shelter beds. And so I think if you look at the science of ending homelessness, a determination has been made that we should move more towards permanent housing.
And you mentioned this, the report by Harvey Rose, the budget and legislative analyst for the Board of Supervisors, and it found that San Francisco spends $165 million in homeless services each year.
And for people that are no longer homeless.
But the thing I wanted to ask you about is in that report, it sort of said these numbers haven't changed much since 2005. And
yes,
it feels
true.
Like we're doing so much. You talked about that 10-year plan of Gavin Newsom and Angela Alioto. So from your perspective, what is changing?
Well, I think we're at a tipping point right now. I think that people in San Francisco recognize that the city is doing very well and that this, to credit the mayor and our technology sector in San Francisco, we have the highest job growth of any city in the United States. So clearly that is generating an economic boost in San Francisco. And I think that everyone is looking at how do we invest some of that dividend to really bring down homelessness. It's true. The most dramatic restructuring of our homeless numbers took place in the early 2000s when we had the implementation of Care Not Cash and the Chronic Homeless Plan. And despite a very significant recession that really hurt the city over several years, we had a goal of developing 3,000 new units of permanent supportive housing. And by July, we will have developed 2,800. So I think we really have met that goal.
how much you mentioned the tech boom, right? It seems like a potential solution, but it also seems like it's exacerbating the housing crunch, which is very likely to then increase the number of people who get evicted or just can't afford their apartment anymore. What do you see as that balance sheet of kind of the tech boom as possible solutions, creating these apps and this ability maybe for people to access services, but also creating this even more acute housing crisis?
Yeah. I can say that I had unrealistic expectations. I was somebody that supported the payroll tax reduction, and I think that I didn't fully understand what does this technology boom mean. Yes, there are companies like Twitter that have branded a significant number of millionaires in their company, and they're figuring out what their role is going to be. But there are a lot of other companies that are really trying to make it, and the investments that they have from their backers and investors are really about the companies becoming public. They're not as interested in those companies developing a footprint in terms of philanthropy. So you have companies like Salesforce. I say all praise to Mark and Lynn Benioff. They have had a dramatic effect on changing homelessness for families in San Francisco. And I look at a company like Zendesk that really has gone above and beyond in some of their work. And most
and
recently,
creating this app, yeah.
Link SF, you know, that I think is an example of what it is. But I think that somehow at times I've had an unrealistic expectation of it. And now
of
I'm
what
sort of
the tech boon
what
could
it represents. Yes.
Bring.
And also I was very frustrated because I saw a lot of these companies not hiring Black and Latino people. I've been very outspoken about that. And I've gone and seen at these companies. I mean, they're like snowstorms sometimes. And it's amazing to me. But more often than not, I'm starting to see some things that are working. And so a young woman, Rose Broom, started something, handup.us. And it's an app that you can put on your phone. And it's basically crowdfunding for people that are homeless. And I can tell you, I have gotten people on that. And I've gotten them directly out of homelessness. It's just you bypass the system sometimes and you say, you know what? Here's this gentleman, Marvin Boykins, who was written up in the Chronicle because he was displaced as a chess player. And there was a lot of controversy around it. And this story appeared in the Chronicle and Marvin was very open about his homelessness. And 2 days later, I got emails from two gentlemen that had gone to Lowell High School with Marvin. And they felt awkward about approaching him. They wanted to help. They didn't know how would he react. It turned out his 40th high school anniversary was coming up, reunion was coming up in about 6 weeks. And I went through Hand Up and a bunch of his Lowell classmates donated money and he was able to become housed.
So if, you know, we're spending $165 million on homeless services every year, if you could spend as much as you needed, what would you do?
Well, there is a group of homeless family agencies that I believe are proposing about $5 million in augmentation for family services, and they believe they can get the waiting list, which is right now at 175 families, down to zero. But what I would like to see is there are some vacant SROs in San Francisco, and I think that we just need to start going and tying up some of these buildings because ultimately it costs about $18,000 a year to mitigate the effects of someone living on the street. By the time you pay for police and street cleaning and ER visits and all the things, jail and stuff that people encounter by trying to live on the streets. And so I just think that more and more people want to see people housed. I really haven't had that much pushback. I mean, when I go out and speak to people, I think people are ready to do that. And last week when we had the supplemental, every member of the Board of Supervisors spoke about it. They spoke about what their concerns were. And that's something. I mean, I'm so grateful that you want to talk to me or that people want to listen and go look at Hand Up and just figure out maybe you give a dollar every day to somebody on your block and you kind of see them as having a support system and get them connected to Hand Up. And maybe that support system in your neighborhood will help that person be housed.
That's Bevan Dufty, who's director of HOPE, Housing and Opportunity Partnerships and Engagement, in the mayor's office. So what do you think about local government's efforts to assist homeless populations? Let us know what you think by calling 415-264-7106. And if you have a radical idea about how to house the homeless, give us a call and let us know by leaving a message at 415-264-7106. Thank you. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. There are many organizations throughout the city that offer assistance for people without a home. From shelters to churches to drop-in centers where people can use lockers, get a home-cooked meal, or take a hot shower. But for those who are homeless, getting to these places can be difficult. Right now, there's a project in motion to offer showers on wheels. KALW's Mary Reese brings us this story from our archives.
It's the morning shower period at the Mission Neighborhood Resource Center, a drop-in facility for San Francisco's homeless. The bright yellow and light green painted walls make for a cheery atmosphere. A chess game is underway at one table, and along another wall, a few people move things around in lockers. I follow one young man, James Quiet, to the sign-up desk to take a shower.
Okay, first, we have to put your name, James Quiet, right?
Yes.
Okay, James, let me give you a towel. You have 15 minutes, brother. There is soap inside the shower.
Okay, is the water on?
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Quiet is handed the towel. This one doesn't have holes in it, unlike some of the others. He enters the men's restroom, where two shower stalls occupy the right-hand corner. Quiet lives in a shelter on Bryant Street. To get to his 15-minute shower here, he has to take a bus or walk 30 minutes. Some days, by the time he arrives, he has to wait nearly an hour for his turn to bathe. But he says it's worth it.
Well, you know, we might have appointments. We might have job interviews. You know, just being in the general public, you want to have a good fragrance, you know, and it helps you be confident with whatever you got to do with your day.
But if he doesn't have the time to get there or to wait for a stall, he can't do it. Now, this is not an issue if you've got a permanent place to stay. Denise Sandoval has one. She works in marketing and PR. But she recalls the moment when she realized she wanted to help those who don't have a home.
About 2 years ago, I was walking down the street and I passed by a woman who was crying and who was saying over and over again that she would never be clean. And I thought, maybe I can figure out how to help her get physically clean.
That day, Sandoval discovered that more than 3,000 San Franciscans are sleeping on the streets, not even in shelters or cars. Another number was even more shocking. Outside of the shelters and single-room occupancy hotels, the city and a handful of nonprofits provide only 7 places where a homeless person can take a shower.
Around the same time, the whole mobile food craze was at its peak, and I thought, if we can put gourmet food on wheels, why not showers and toilets?
Old buses. That was Sandoval's idea, to turn old buses into showers. So she asked the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency to give her one of its retired buses to transform into a prototype for her project, which she named Lava May.
And you will have in there a stainless steel shower, a toilet, sink, private changing room, and storage area.
Sandoval has spent the last 2 years envisioning what this shower on a bus scenario would look like. The bus will hold 2 shower stalls, 1 wheelchair accessible. When it's up and running, the Lava May bus will drive to drop-in centers where homeless people already receive some services, but not showers. Its Saturday stop will be outside the Mission Neighborhood Resource Center, which is closed on weekends.
If you look at the map of where showers are located versus where the homeless are in terms of their location in the city, it's a very concentrated area of bricks and mortar showers, really hard to access. So we're trying to partner with people or organizations who are as far flung as possible to reach the people who have limited access.
Lava May will operate 6 days a week on a regular schedule with stops in front of a different drop-in center each day. Besides being strategic about where the bus stops, because support from the neighbors is crucial, Lava May will also need to be ready for heavy use.
We know that we'll probably do 2 full days in the Tenderloin, because even though most of the shower facilities are there, there's still a massive shortage.
Back at the Mission Neighborhood Resource Center, without Lava May rolling yet, showers are in high demand. In the past year, homeless clients took a total of 13,155 showers. That's about 1,000 showers a month. And access to a private shower stall could make a big difference for people like Kara Sampson.
I'm not a full transsexual from a female to male, and I think that puts me in a dangerous category.
There are plenty of reasons to want privacy while you're bathing. And when you're homeless, there are few chances to be out of the public eye. Whether it's on a bus or indoors, Richard Day says taking a shower while others wait their turn will never leave enough time for some things.
No singing now. You don't have time to sing here. You just got to get in and get out. No singing. Now in a tub, be different. Yeah. They don't have tubs here. I might sing in a tub.
Well, buses with bathtubs may never hit the road, but buses with showers are on their way. In San Francisco, I'm Mary Reese for Cross Currents.
Lava May expects to roll out its first pilot program this May and eventually have up to 4 buses on the road offering showers on wheels. For more information about Lava May, you can visit our website, we're KALW.org. Just click on Cross Currents. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Julie Kane, Jen Sheehan, Jeremy Dalmas, Nina Gensler-Debs, Seth Samuel, Angela Johnston, Ryan Miller, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Stephen Short, Raisu Sussman, and Melanie Young. Today's show was line produced by Leela Day and engineered by Chris Hoff. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And thanks to you, we can proudly say we are listener-supported, independent public radio. The band you're hearing now is called Spiderheart from Oakland. Spiderheart will be playing Saturday at the Starry Plow in Berkeley. The fun begins around 9 p.m. All of that information, along with more local music and more local stories, is at KALW.org. Just click on Cross Currents. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.